Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. Joe, do you know what today is?
What's today?
Platform Smackdown! Except I'll put in real sound effects. Tell the good people why we are doing a Platform Smackdown today.
Oh boy. I mean, beyond it being like a core part of our business to know what these platforms are, how to use them, how to talk about them, when to apply them, when to employ them, it's also just fun. It's fun to talk about them. And I think actually it's a super valuable service for all the listeners of this podcast to understand a little bit better how to think about each of these platforms, why Zoom, why and what Zoom is good at, why and what Hopin is good at, why and what any of these things are good at, and how we think about them. Because I think our perspective on them is different than your average user. You know, we've run them through their paces. We've applied them in 100 million different ways. We've hacked them and broken them in every way we can think of. And I'm excited to get to talk about that with everyone.
Yeah. And of course, there's like 7,000 million platforms. And if you want to know about any of the ones we don't cover today, you know where to find us. Give us a ring. AltogetherNow.live if you are new and have just found us through this podcast episode. But today, we're just going to focus on three that we think are particularly valuable and are used most often via building live digital experiences, rather than conferences or any of the other really good use cases for a live digital event. Does that sound fair, Joe?
Sounds fair. It sounds good. It's a nice focusing mechanism because otherwise we would be here forever. Hundreds and hundreds of these platforms, more coming every single day.
Stop making platforms.
I can't wait for the platform apocalypse.
Ooh, I like a platform apocalypse. Oh my God. All right. Okay. So here is the format for today. We're going to try to make it really simple for you. We're going to hit the good, what's awesome about said platform in terms of building live digital experiences.
All right. And then you probably guessed it, the bad. We're going to talk about what these don't do well or what people try to make them do and they just shouldn't do that.
Yeah. We're going to hit the ugly, because it's a commonly said phrase, and also because each of these platforms has at least one like outstandingly gnarly feature that we want to make sure you know about.
It's very good to know. I can't wait for that section. Okay, so once we get through all of that, then we're going to talk about when to actually use it. You know, what are the practical applications and use cases? You know, we're going to get real with you.
And we'll also talk about how to make it worth it. So if you choose to use this platform, what should you be doing to really make using that platform worth it in terms of meeting your goals as a company?
Yeah. And by the time you get here in the conversation, you'll be ready to level up. So we'll tell you how to take that next step, how to make that even better.
And what platform to use when it's time to take that level up.
That too.
And then, of course, we'll end with my very favorite topic. P.S. Don't be dummies like us.
We messed up a whole bunch, so you don't have to. That's so nice of us. So nice of us to share our misfortunes and misgivings about these platforms.
We're the best. Okay. Everybody's square. We understand the assignment here today.
I think I got it. I don't know. I'll be the proxy for the audience. Let's get into it.
First up, Zoom.
As it feels like it feels cheap and kind of lame to start with Zoom, but it's also like, how could we not start with Zoom? It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. So let's just do it.
And to be fair, like as you've heard, if you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks, we held out for a long time as a company. We didn't work on Zoom shows, period. The end. So we're just now to this. And I feel like that really underscores why we're starting with it. It's fresh on our minds. We're using it right now with the Smithsonian. And it is actually creating a really valuable interesting, enjoyable experience. So with that said, let's start with you, Joe, since you're working on that, and go with the good.
I'm in it and the good. So I think at the core is just the ubiquitous nature of Zoom. It's relatively easy to use. I'm going to put some air quotes on that easy. We'll come back to that in a little bit. But it's everywhere. It's, you know, we were all forced onto it. It became the dominant platform across the past 2 years. And so there's a certain level of quote unquote reliability with it. You can trust that someone's going to have some experience with it, whether they be talent, whether they be really old, whether they be really young. And it just makes it easier to move through the process of getting an event up and running, because there's a baseline acceptance, understanding, and use case with it. So you're starting above water when you jump into something with Zoom. And then what flows logically from that is, you know, when you are working with bigger organizations or institutions, like often you have to get through an IT team, and Zoom is usually already approved on that list, and you don't have to fight them as hard. Whereas if you're trying to employ any of these other platforms or programs, there's security protocols, there's all these layers of red tape to cut through, to jump through, to trip through, to get stuck on. So Zoom, again, just being the most ubiquitous, the most widely adopted, the easiest to use, it makes it a good starting point.
Yeah. And I remember you mentioned too last week, I think, something, I forget what we were talking about, but you mentioned that it was really valuable for some of the organizations we work with because it's already got integrations with services they were using pre-doing live digital. Things like if you've collected and sold all of your in-person tickets, you know, across the past number of years on Eventbrite, maybe you don't want to lose that. Like it integrates with Zoom, so you can keep that going, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All of those sort of second layer applications and organizations, when Eventbrite was trying to decide, hey, which video conferencing platform are we going to integrate with? Well, let's probably start with Zoom and we'll figure out the rest later. So it has a leg up in all of those. If you're already using, you know, products and platforms like Eventbrite for ticket sales, it has a pretty clean Zoom integration. So it makes your life just a little bit easier when you're trying to set up an event.
Love that. And of course, we would be remiss to not mention it's just super affordable. And so especially if you're just trying to get up and running with live digital events, some of these other platforms we're going to talk about today can be cost prohibitive. And I don't think Zoom is in any stretch of the imagination, right?
And you can get in with a lot of the high value, high quality tools for pretty cheap, at under $100 for like all the way up to kind of crazy webinar capabilities. I will caveat, though, and maybe this will transition us into the bad end or the ugly at any moment, is that it can get crazy expensive really quickly on an organizational level.
Oh.
And like, you know, they are like a bazillion dollar company. So that's, yeah, there's got to be some money making in there somewhere. But if you're just trying to get up and running, absolutely, you can do it cheaply. You can get a whole lot of powerful tools for like $15 and then, you know, under $100 for that webinar feature.
All right. So moving on to the bad, I guess it sounds like they upsell you a lot.
Oof, it's all those sneaky layers that come with being an organization that can allocate large chunks of budget, right? It's the SSO logins, and it's the, oh, I actually need 1,000 people for this webinar. And they're like, boom, give us all your money. So it's every time you need to like make a little step upward in complexity, in security, in size, that they're like, ah, we know who you are. You're no longer just the run-of-the-mill user of this. You're an organization. We are going to crush you.
And that's really true, not only for the financials with Zoom, but I think of just the settings, right? When you get on that back end, if you're the person at your company who's responsible for producing all of this stuff, if you didn't hire us for some reason, there are a lot of wonky settings. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about that here in a second, but it can be deceptively, I think, complex in that way.
So complex. And it stems from the fact that, you know, what is Zoom made for? It's for, you know, peer-to-peer, individual-to-individual video meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not meant for live performances, which is, you know, what we do. We put on a show. Mm-hmm. And this platform is not designed to that. It, you know, does wonky things with your audio to minimize bandwidth. It does wonky things with your video to minimize bandwidth. It has 101 million settings on the back end that I still don't fully understand all of them. Spoiler. And so if you want to, you know, bend it to your will and make it do anything outside of just like, hey, we are all here on video together, that's working. It can be really difficult without a whole lot of testing to get it to work the way that you want to.
All right. Some other things on our list for the bad of Zoom. I mean, of course, to the point you made at the beginning of this conversation, Joe, we think about things a little differently than a lot of folks do when it comes to live digital. And so for us, one of the things that really stands out about Zoom is it's very difficult to make it feel like an experience for your attendees, which, you know, we have identified as the key to achieving goals beyond just attendance with live digital. It's a utility, and it's clearly Zoom, and you're at the whim of whomever has those admin controls letting you out of white box purgatory and, you know, into Zoom where, you know, if you're in a webinar, you can't do anything if they've decided to turn everything off.
Yeah. Oh, being in a webinar where you just can't do anything is so disempowering.
Yeah.
It's really, really, it can be really difficult. You know, I can see, you know, even in that world, an experience designed for that specific use case, but
yeah. Yeah.
But it's yeah, it's a bit of a clunky world, and it always is going to look like Zoom. It's always going to feel like Zoom. You're always going to be aware of the fact that you're in Zoom, which if we're just chatting, great. If we're trying to be in an immersive experience, not as great.
And also all of those things that we just discussed, of course, like lead you to, there's not a lot of analytics that you can mine from a Zoom experience in terms of your attendees. Because you don't have agency really. So you can see who showed up, but that's about it. And what chats were left, you can download those. And again, this is of course, from our particular perspective, maybe that's the only thing that matters to you. For us, folks that are working with us are really looking to live digital as a means and a method to further engage people a little further down their funnel and convert them to, you know, some outcome, some goal, some, you know, purchase, whatever it is. And analytics are super important to that.
Yeah, I want to know how long did people stay for my webinar. I want to know, you know, what other actions they, if I was allowing them to take, did they take?
Great. And so then we have come, of course, to the ugly. And this one was easy. It's just like literally ugly. It's just literally ugly. Zoom is ugly. It's ugly. The application is ugly. The viewing space, the stage, quote unquote, is ugly. And the worst offense is that even if you try to sort of hack the system and switch your broadcast in a, you know, OBS or vMix and import it into Zoom via a virtual camera so you can make a broadcast that looks a little more like a TV show, Zoom still compresses the video down to like nothing. It's still ugly.
Mm-hmm. You just can't win.
No.
Now, that's, yeah, kind of to iterate on your version of the ugly. It is how, like, how myopically focused it is on reducing the bandwidth and yeah. All the settings default to, hey, we're going to do this funky thing with audio to make it easy for, like, a utility product. We're going to downgrade the audio. We're going to automatically adjust microphone volumes. We're going to, yeah, compress the video and, you know, default it to under 720p most of the time. And there are, again, hacky ways that you can turn on original audio, stop the automatic adjustment of mic levels, put it in stereo if you have that ability with your microphone, or to upgrade or up-level the quality of the video all the way to 1080p if you can freaking find those settings, good luck. Yeah. So it's like technically there, but you have to dance around those settings in order to figure it out. And it's just like, it's vicious, it's ugly.
All right, let's head to the good stuff with Zoom. When, Joe, when is it worth it to use Zoom if you're trying to get into the live digital game?
Absolutely never. No, just kidding.
Podcast over. Bye.
No, Zoom is a great tool. I think for many of the reasons we talked about in the good, right? It is affordable to get in. It is ubiquitous. Everyone has it. So it's a quick and easy access point to your audience. So if you're just trying to get something up and trying to get it up cheaply and most easily, then it's a great tool. It's a great place to get started. It's a great place to mess around with, to try and figure out some of those settings and to just get something up and off the ground. A bit more specifically, I think when you have, you know, a show that's not too complicated in terms of the number of elements, people speaking to each other, number of presentation materials or videos that are being played, if it's fairly simple, you know, only a handful of people or a handful of graphical things happening, mm-hmm. you can do a decent job.
Mm-hmm.
Right in Zoom. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What about you? When would you use a Zoom?
Yeah, just to get started, you know, like I think there's so much potential. I know, we know there's so much potential in gathering people live in digital spaces. But it can be real hard to get started in it. It can feel overwhelming. It can be expensive. It can be more work for a team that's already overloaded. And Zoom, to the point you just made, is like hands down the easiest way to just get started. And that really takes me right into how to make it worth it, right? For us, you know, we think about Zoom as an awesome solution to just getting started. But that has to be connected to proving something out, which is, does Live Digital work for me and my company? And is it serving our goals? If it is, Zoom's not going to be your long-term answer. You just can't get enough from it. So how to make it worth it, at least in my opinion, one of the many ways also, but one of the most important ways is just to keep great records of what analytics you can collect across your Zoom-based Live Digital engagements so that you can start looking at those patterns and deciding and making a data-informed decision as to whether you should level up to something different, right? And for us, it's like we said, not a ton of stuff you can collect, but you've got your attendance ratios. You can obviously measure your registrations versus who's showed up. You can easily collect chat-based feedback and measure sentiment and sort of, you know, people's testimonials to what you're doing. Is it important to them? Do they derive value from it? And you can pull interaction data too if you do Q&As on Zoom. And I think that probably would unearth some things over time, some patterns over time that can help inform you deciding when to level up. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think use Zoom to build and then take that audience and bring them somewhere else.
Zoom to build. I love it.
Yeah, and when you are moving on from there, you know, definitely thinking about like your audience size, you know, at what point does it make sense to say, okay, if I can get each of these people to spend a little bit of money buying a ticket, does that help to offset the investment in a slightly more expensive, slightly more complicated platform? But looking at that runway in terms of time invested, okay, hey, I'm going to invest time and energy in learning a new platform now as well, and I'm going to have to ask my audience to come learn this new platform. You know, not as hard for them as it would be for you to learn a new platform. But you have to factor that in because it is going to take time. Yep. It's going to take a little bit of money invested and it has to be worth it. There has to be an audience there, a reason to execute from a content lens to all make that worth it.
All right. So we have seen a consistent record of our audience sizes. We are making a little bit of money. We feel like we can handle the little bit of friction that's going to come with switching and leveling up on a platform. So it's time to move on to the next one. But wait, you didn't think I was going to skip. P.S. Don't be dummies like us.
Oh, I thought we were going to get away without having to explain the situation in which we were dummies.
The honor is all yours, Joe.
Okay.
This was not our fault, to be fair.
So when you're hacking Zoom's tools and, you know, maybe changing the view, if you will, whether or not it's that speaker view, which automatically switches, guessing based on people's audio levels, who's speaking, or if you're up in gallery view and you're porting that through to your webinar audience or whoever it may be, Zoom may not be recording your video the way you think it is. There's a whole slew of settings in the back end of Zoom. You know, if you have to actually go to like zoom.us and go into your account there, can't do it through the app. And you have to make sure that all of these different styles of video recordings are enabled. It's just a little checkbox, but it's recording the speaker view, recording the gallery view, recording the host view. And if you don't do that, you get one. And if there was, you know, gallery view set up, it just doesn't record it. And if someone wasn't speaking but was pinned or something stupid like that, they just don't show up in the feed. And it seems insane to me that the video settings and what is recorded wouldn't just be automatically tethered to the tools that are built into the front-facing tool. So we ended an event with a half a recording at best. It worked out better than it could have. But
I'm here to tell you, Joe's live switching in Zoom was incredible, and I'm so sad that it didn't get recorded.
It was a manual clicking of buttons to facilitate the flow between a conversation. It was pretty awesome. Thank you for that compliment.
You're welcome.
So yeah, check your settings.
All right, what's the next platform we're moving to, Joseph?
All right, so we're moving into the slightly more esoteric great platform called Maestro. Not as ubiquitous as Zoom, but more powerful and better for broadcasts. So do you want to get us kicked off with the good here and why might someone want to use a Maestro?
Yeah, I love Maestro. Maestro's rad. Maestro has built-in ticketing and communication, so that's the first way you're starting to really branch off from Zoom. Although I guess Zoom has all those apps that you can integrate, but like Maestro has a really robust ticketing a system built in that is made for event producers. So that's number one. Number two, Maestro has a bunch of built-in interaction tools that are really neat that you can control from the back end of Maestro and then that immediately hit the front end so that your audience can interact. And we'll talk a little more about that here in a minute too. Maestro is highly customizable. So we're starting to move out of that sort of like Zoom is ugly land. You can start really thinking about how your digital space is your brand space when you invite folks in. While it is more expensive than Zoom, it's still not that bad. They've got a couple different price levels, and the lowest one is totally doable if, as we said before, you've sort of gotten the hooks in through Zoom, you've got an audience, they're willing to pay some money. Easy to do Maestro. Would you throw anything else on that list?
Yeah, just the idea that it's built for the internet, it's built for performance, it's built for live streaming. It's not a video conferencing utility like Zoom is. Yeah. It's actually designed for something to be broadcast to like a digital stage and then a whole bunch of audience members to watch and interact. It's just built for a different world. So that's a really good thing if you're trying to put on a live performance in the internet.
Okay, so we love Maestro. What's bad? What's the bad?
Love. I there's no bad. No bad at all. All these platforms are perfect. I will say on the bad front, like I mentioned before, that sort of investment in money, but also in time, in energy, right? It's just kind of hard to build up the experiences so that they feel like they exist in a big space. Like you need to put a lot of time and energy into learning the tools, into figuring out how all the different buttons work, into imagining the experience that your audience is going to be having in there and actually designing it to let them do that. It's just kind of hard.
Yeah. And actually, to the point you were saying about it making it feel like a big space, Maestro doesn't do multiple locations particularly well, in my opinion, like for the same event. They kind of do that one main stage. They have the ability to do breakout, what we would, you know, think of as breakouts in our heads, but it's just not quite, it doesn't feel like a big, huge digital event space that you can wander around and discover what's going on in different places.
Yeah, it's a fairly flat experience. The other sort of net negative in here is that, you know, when you're scaling up here, it really does take a second person, a second producer inside of this to really manage those interaction tools well. So it's where you can be a one-man band within Zoom, you know, it gets a little clunky trying to manage Q&A sometimes, but you can make it happen. With Maestro and, you know, really utilizing the tool, building up those audience engagements and experiences for the audience, it's going to take a second person to really do it well. Can you do it by yourself? Probably. Should you ask a friend to come help out for that first one to justify it? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. great. And then really the ugly on Maestro, there's not a ton, which is great. But to the point you were making about Zoom with the upcharges, this is very prevalent with Maestro. Maestro is one of those live streaming tools. There's sort of a whole ecosystem of these that comes from an older business model pre-pandemic where they're charging you per minute, per 15 minutes, per stream, per, you know, it's just like all these little time-based upcharges. Is very difficult to get any sense of how much you're going to have to pay for any one event until you know exactly how many people are there, exactly how long they're going to stay, which you're never going to know. I was actually just re-reviewing their pricing sheet while I was working on this episode and was like, oh shit. There's a lot of fucking upcharges.
You're like, I'm still confused.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the call out that you made to sort of the old business model. It's just like it was like a margin based business model. It's like, hey, how much does it cost us to just like host videos and pay for electricity? Great. Like that's on a per wattage, per time basis. Let's just pass that through.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's not user friendly. It's clunky. It's ugly.
Okay, Joe, so when should someone consider using Maestro as their platform?
I think when you're crossing that threshold from, hey, we're just doing simple Q&A to, hey, we want people to really be engaging and interacting with this broadcast, interacting with this live stream. You know, again, possible in Zoom? Absolutely. You can do magic with the chat. But if you really want to think about it and up-level that experience to make it feel a bit more professional, feel a bit more sophisticated, and actually have people engaging and interacting in a substantive way beyond just chat, I think it's a really good time to make the move up to a platform like Maestro and put the time and the energy into designing those experiences thoughtfully for your audience.
I agree. And that's really also the lead into how to make Maestro worth it. If you are going to use it, get clever and design intentional interactions that let you learn about your audience member and start to segment them, market to them afterwards, right? Consider building in merchandise sales, because Maestro actually is really good for that as well. Like that, they consider that a form of interaction with the stream. So yeah, I think that's really someone who's going to really make it worth it to use Maestro is going to be thinking about things like that.
Yeah, I love the way that you put that. Basically, like, let people tell you what they're interested in. Yeah. Give them things to do, give them things to click, give them things to interact with, and they're going to self-select into a category that lets you know, hey, next time you're doing something like this, like, send it to me. I'm raising my hand right now. Yeah. I want to be part of this.
So when should someone consider leveling up from Maestro to a different platform?
Well, so I think a lot of people can hang comfortably in Maestro forever. They want to, right? It does have that semi-flat experience, right? It allows people to interact with the broadcast, but it doesn't allow people to go much deeper than that, interact with other audience members, to expand in, you know, digital space and give people access to other things. So I think if, you know, people putting on these live performances want either of those things, want to give their sort of audience members more agency, the ability to interact with each other, interact directly with the people in the broadcast or in the stream, I think you got to start looking and moving outside of Maestro to do that.
Love that. And also probably you want to be thinking that you can charge a higher ticket price, because we're going to start moving into expensive land with these platforms after we leave Maestro.
Absolutely. I think that the sort of level of audience access and engagement sort of will go hand in hand with a higher ticket price. How are you going to justify that higher ticket price if you're not doing something more interesting, more access-oriented, more agency-oriented?
All right, before we move on to our last platform, we, of course, must do don't be dummies like us. And I thought of one, actually, while we were talking, that I didn't even jot down for myself. Which is, I don't think we actually did this, but this was a thing I didn't know that I learned across time at our company. With Maestro, back to the whole upcharging and the time-based user fees. Don't quote someone out exact prices. Give them the quote, an actual quote, and put a mechanism in your contract that they will pay for the final usage on Maestro, because it's just too hard to figure out what you're going to end up having to pay. I mean, I guess if you're a person that owns a license, right? And this is really only true if you own a license to Maestro and you're helping other people put things on, or other departments or whatever it is, just know that you're just not going to be able to know the final price. So don't tell someone you do.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, just universally. It's like, yeah. Anytime there is potential variability in cost in a way that you cannot possibly pin it down until after the fact, like, do not take that on. Do not. Unless you have a whole ton of data that allows you to, like, very reasonably estimate it. Don't do that. Just say, hey, you, dear client, are on the hook with me for this.
Yep.
And we'll be nice to you. You be nice to us. Everyone will be happy and no one will go bankrupt.
That concludes Jess's business advice for dummies. All right. We're heading into the home stretch. And I bet you can guess what the last platform is, probably because it's right in the title of this episode.
Whova!
Boo! Just kidding. We kind of like Whova.
No comment. I plead the fifth.
Where are we going, Joe?
It wouldn't be us if we weren't talking about Hopin.
That's true. That's true.
Like, that comes both from, like, a very genuine, warm place in my heart. I think Hopin's an amazing piece of technology. I think the team at Hopin is awesome. And also, like, we use the hell out of that platform. right? It is one of the more flexible, one of the more complicated, and it's a really great, really great tool that I'm excited to talk about.
Me too. This is like really the old don't reinvent the wheel. Just learn from us. All right. So let's dig in to the good.
The good. So as we've gone down this funnel, you've probably seen Zoom. Very, very uncustomizable. Maestro, getting better, doing more, feeling more like my brand, feeling a little bit cooler. Colors, logos, images. Hopin lets you take that to the extreme. You can design this thing within an inch of its life to feel like your space. Logos, branding, colors, down to the like CSS level, you can make tweaks and adjustments and make this really feel like your space so that when your attendees, when your audience, when your patrons are coming into this, they feel like they know what they're getting into. They feel like home. Doesn't feel like Zoom. Mm. Doesn't feel like a web page. Feels like a really immersive virtual venue experience, which
maybe
is just like
even
so valuable.
Fun, dare I say?
Fun.
Like a fun
crazy
environment.
So crazy. So I think that's absolutely huge and is such a leg up that Hopin has, is that level of customization that's possible. What else?
Ooh, I think you gotta hit the accessibility support, right? Because we sort of think about live digital as like inherently like an act of radical accessibility. And Hopin actually has done an incredible job, in our opinion, of adding more traditional accessibility features, like what we used to think of as accessibility, which still is, but it's only one little piece of the pie. So they've got incredible integrations for third-party apps for interpretation and captions. They just keep adding awesome integrations for you to send, you know, certified captions, live captions straight to the stage without a third-party app. They really have, in my opinion, put a huge priority on these tools. And I haven't run across any platform that has such in-depth and really thoughtful accessibility tools.
Yeah, the focus that they've put on that, especially given how difficult it is for a platform with the complexity of Hopin to do something like that, right? It's not just a video player. It's not just YouTube's player that, great, pretty easy to integrate, you know, an AI bot that, you know, reads the audio and writes out the captions. Done. Mm-hmm. It's like many layers of video players, many layers of complexity, and they really have stepped up and said, this is a priority, and we're going to get accessibility features into every nook and cranny of this platform.
I love it. They also have lots of integrations on the note of third-party apps. Everything from the kind of stuff you'd be looking for if you're a conference user to you know, things that we use in more entertainment-facing experiences. So just like an awesome app store that you can plug in if you've got accounts for all kinds of manners of things.
Such good stuff. Another big, big good here. That felt weird to say. Whatever. no, but another great set of features here, which is very different than a lot of platforms that exist out there, is actually integrated ticketing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it can be kind of clunky to sell tickets over here and ship people over there. We talked a bit before about, you know, Zoom's integration with Eventbrite. Great. Helpful. Does the trick. But it also locks up your data in separate places. It gets a little clunky. And so to have everything unified and to be able to map analytics all the way from the first point of interaction with your event, you know, the ticket purchase, all the way through to the actual engagement with the event itself and anything that's happening sort of post-event, it's all right there. And it's all so robust. They have incredible analytics, so in-depth, so many reports. So complicated.
On any given day, you can find us buried underneath all of the reports from Hopin.
Yeah. So if you have the need, if you have the want, if you have the skill set, the numbers are there to slice and to dice and to take actionable learnings out of and make business decisions with.
So we don't like Hopin or anything. It's clear.
It.
The from the good. But, you know, let's be fair. We got to give fair assessments. We want everybody to really know what they're in for. So there's some bad that comes with Hopin, in our opinion.
Yeah, it's true. There's bad apples in every bunch. What am I doing?
I have no idea.
but for sure, I think there is a really high barrier to entry for Hopin. It is a complicated platform. With all the good comes... Yeah, that complexity and that emotional and time investment into just like going through every menu and figuring out what they do and how to tweak it and how to hack it and how to make it work. And oh, this schedule over here. And oh, that date field over there. And ah, crap. All of a sudden, everything's broken again. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to get set up well. And you can do a lot wrong. And then you got to go back and fix it. It's a lot.
Didn't we just found, I mean, y'all, we have done near 100 shows on Hopin. We are power users, and we just found another like thing that messed up. We had a show live, and like we had all the settings ready to extend the venue because we knew that was going to happen. And then it turned out there was like a secondary setting for that nested in some other menu that we missed.
Yeah.
And then tickets were sold out and people were tweeting at us.
It was a quick fix. Just to quickly shift back to the good. Excellent customer support. Really helped us out of a pinch in that one.
Yeah, it's so true. But yes.
But boy, oh boy, I would have just rather that extra set of date fields not existed.
Yep. I think another bullet under the bad potentially is just that if you're going to use any of the areas of a Hopin venue that require or enable video sharing, there's a lot of ways for attendees' tech to start failing or for them to perceive their tech is failing. Mm-hmm. And that's a way it differs quite a bit from Zoom webinar or Maestro just being a chatting attendee on the stage. In Hopin, there are areas where you can go and you can get on screen, but you know, if you have your VPN on at work, that's going to throw things haywire. If you're on Edge, the Edge browser, that'll throw things on, you know, haywire. There's any number of little weird tech things that once you try to put your audio video on can go wrong. And in our experience, can panic non-technical attendees.
Yeah, absolutely on that. You know, the Hopin desktop experience is a browser-based experience. And so that adds just so many layers of complexity to what could happen. You know, are they in Chrome? Are they on a PC? Are they on a Mac? Are they in Firefox? Are they in Internet Explorer somehow? How did you get there?
Yeah, how did you get Internet Explorer? I thought they retired.
And each one plays just a little differently in terms of how camera and audio permissions are granted. And it just, it adds many, many potential pitfalls. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to, you know, foster the experience for 3,000 people, like some people are going to have issues, and mm-hmm. some of those people are not going to know how to solve them themselves. Some of those people are going to get mad at you.
It's so true. We have some good tips for that coming shortly. Yeah. And I think like the last thing, at least for me, that is on the bad list is that with all of the good that there are so many analytics that come with using Hopin, they're kind of just a mess of spreadsheets. So I feel like even for us, we're, you know, over two years into using Hopin, and we're just getting ahead of all of this enough to start building models and pivot tables and like doing something with this mess of spreadsheets. Like, if I had to really take a guess, we go and we'll look through the analytics. You know, obviously, like our live digital strategists are going to want real data to inform the things that we suggest. But I'm going to take a guess out of those almost 100 shows that maybe like 3 people ever bothered to actually look at anything other than how many people showed up against how many people registered.
Yeah, that hurts my heart, and it sounds
right. I know, because there's so much information there, but it's kind of like you say, Joe, right? Like, it doesn't. If there are a bunch of analytics and no one uses them, that doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
It can't go on the good if no one uses them.
But yeah, like, what are you recording if it just goes off into the ether and no one ever looks at it ever again? The anecdote I like there for people who get this reference, but Nike Fuel Bands. Back like 10 years ago, there was this Fitbit style device from Nike that would just like record things. I don't even know what they were. Fuel points.
Okay.
Right? And like it became like a little craze and people would like have their Nike Fuel Band and getting their fuel points. But then no one would do anything with that information. They would just buy this $150 bracelet and then wear it around.
Get 100 fuel points.
Collect fuel points that didn't mean anything. They were made up internet points that never connected through to any action, never connected through to any next step. It drove me nuts. But
is this the beginning of Web 3?
It was the beginning of fitness trackers for sure.
Oh yeah.
Silly. So if you're going to record all those good analytics, you should use them.
Yeah.
You should look at them. You should poke them.
We can help you with that. Oh, the ugly. What's on our the ugly list for Hopin?
There's a few. Can't get around the fact that it is pricey.
Yeah, it is.
Right, we talked about the benefit of ticketing through it. They take a cut of that ticket fee. We talked about the, you know, number of people that you can have in it. You pay for all of those people. And if you want, you know, the highest level of access, the most and best tools, like, you do need to upgrade upfront to an expensive subscription. And it's just, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to invest in this. Yeah. And it's worth it if you're doing lots of events and you have a team to put them all on. But oh boy, that number is scary. That number is ugly. That number stares you down. And it's tough to pull the trigger if you don't have the plan for how to utilize it.
I think that is an excellent encapsulation of that. So let's expand a little further on when to use it, to the point you were making, Joe. I think, like, large scale events where you know you're going to drive a ton of value and you need a lot of agency for attendees. That's one that I think about a lot, right? Like, folks who have an audience, a community that they're gathering so they can do some modeling around tickets and ticket revenue. And then who have a goal that goes beyond just getting someone into the live digital event, who is thinking about how to interact and design interactions that teach you about those people, who is thinking about where they want those people to go after that live digital event. That's the large scale events. That's sort of where I think you should be thinking about Hopin.
Yeah, absolutely. Large scale, and how many of them are you doing, right? It can't really just be for one-offs, right? Like, all caveats, you could do it just for a one-off event if it's freaking massive. We think the most value, and again, back to those analytics and how you're using them, back to branding the space to make people feel like they're inside of something uniquely yours. Like, you got to keep them coming back. You have to engage with them multiple times across the year. You have to utilize this platform, utilize that subscription. All that time and energy you're going to invest in learning the platform, building each of these events up, like, you want to put it to use by having many, many points of interaction, many digital experiences. And you got to have a plan and a strategy for making that worthwhile for your company.
Yep. And I will put in a honorable mention that I think you can think about Hopin when you're doing smaller scale events, but it really needs to be a smaller scale event that is, like, highly meaningful and really special, and, like, maybe provides some kind of heightened access to something your audience wants, so that you can charge more, obviously, you know. But Hopin does facilitate that sort of, you can design things like that. And if you didn't know, there's a certified agency program with Hopin. So you can engage one of those partners and use their license, pay them basically to produce your event on their agency license for a slightly, you know, lower cost than just, like, going hog out and getting the whole thing yourself. Yeah. But that's not right for most situations. I just wanted to mention it because we have seen that work in our own work.
Absolutely. I think worth, like you said, giving credit to Hopin for, they're trying to make it work for absolutely everyone. Yeah. Like, they want everyone in the world to be able to use their platform, their technology, their tools.
Love it. Okay. So I feel like we've kind of covered how to make it worth it in all of our answers to these things. But I did want to say very specifically that, like, if you are inclined to and can create an experience that winds from one to many, i.e. a broadcast on a stage going out to a bunch of people in chat, like on Zoom, to many to many, which in Hopin is their sessions area where you can put lots of people together on screen, to one to one and back again, then Hopin's your platform for sure.
Dreamy.
Super dreamy. So when does someone level up from Hopin, and where the fuck should they go from there, Joe?
Oh boy. I mean, if you have more money than God and you just want to build something 100% custom, like, go for it. You know, there's organizations like G2 Planet that will just basically, like, a dev shop, like, build you a custom website, a custom experience that is exactly to a T designed for and with you to do what you need for that event or that series of events. And if you have the money and you have the team to build that thing, to be thoughtful about how that thing should be built, absolutely it could be worth it, because you can have it be 100% to your specification.
And I was thinking, in addition, maybe another place you would branch off from, you know, Zoom, Maestro, and Hopin is if you are an organization or a brand that's hosting tons of maybe like internal events. There are platforms like Bevy that sort of add an extra layer that our platforms we've chatted about today don't have, where there's like an entry point to the brand that shows you all of the events that are coming up and that allows you to decide which ones you're signing up for, as opposed to with Hopin, for instance. If we would do that, we would make a third party website, right? With like listings and things like that, but it'd be separate Hopin venues. Platforms like Bevy connect that sort of entire ecosystem for one single brand together nicely.
Yeah, a really good call out. So it's more like, instead of leveling up, it's like a step to the right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, hey, my needs are slightly different. I need everything collected in one page. Thank you, bye.
Yes, I love that.
And absolutely, a Bevy feels great for that. Even a platform like Disco, which, you know, slightly more education focused, housing of events all inside of one sort of comfortable to access destination for the people who want to use it.
I like that a lot. Comfortable to access.
Yeah, whatever that means.
So we've come to PS Don't Be Dummies Like Us, but here's the thing. We've made too many mistakes on Hopin. It was impossible to just sort of highlight one. So instead of Don't Be Dummies Like Us, we're going to just highlight, I think, our top three pro tips we utilize to be building successful experiences from the beginning on Hopin.
You have to be absolutely maniacal about testing the user experience, the different pathways that someone can take, how they enter the event, how they navigate the event, click every button, twist every knob, bop every bop it. If you haven't seen it happen with your own eyes, it is not real yet. You need someone on your team who has said, yes, I saw that, it worked. Yes, those captions came through. Yes, that switch was switched. Yes, that comment was commented. If you haven't seen it, it may as well not be real. Test, test, test.
And consider making guides that sort of sum up all that testing whenever it's something that's relevant to your attendees. I think we often are thinking about making guides for like recommended tech settings, right? That's pretty consistent and not everybody understands that. How to cast on all the different freaking casting devices, tips for moderators, tips for talent, all of those learnings, if they can be put forward to your attendees in a fun, pretty succinct guide, that's just like yet another step of the maniacal testing process for us.
Absolutely. Okay, what else? What else do we have?
Ooh, I mean, back to what you were saying somewhere a little bit before, we always have a dedicated tech support team member on screen in a sessions room in Hopin that's easy for the attendees to find, which for us means we make the outside cover of that room our own brand, and it screams really tech support. That way it stands out from all the other, you know, rooms on that level. And I think it's important to note, like, at least for us, we found that yes, the function of that obviously is to have someone who can directly connect quickly to a attendee to help them with their technology, but also in a digital environment where everyone's sort of reduced down to an avatar and a chat and technology that's just not cooperating, sometimes just having a friendly, kind, calm face on screen does all the work.
Yeah, the number of times we've just had people be like, that sigh of relief when they see a human being, even if they can't hear that human being because they're having audio issues, they see that human being, they go, oh, thank God. Thank God. Yeah. Not another disintermediated chatbot.
Okay, so that's one and two. What's our last tip for everyone on Hopin?
You got to build templates. Templated drop sheets for client assets. Just, there's a million different things that need to be put into the venue, you know, back to the complexity of learning how to do it. And it just has to be as simple as possible to communicate to someone who has never seen the inside of this venue.
Oh my God.
So invest the time and energy yourself, or invest the time and energy in communicating to someone else what you need from them without them needing to know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah. And if you happen to be an organization that uses Figma, you're in luck because they've built all these Figma templates to allow your client to like port over all that stuff. But For 90% of us, I assume we're not using Figma. So yeah, we build drop sheets for all of those assets, as Joe said. The copy CSS is harder. but definitely we've perfected that over time to be as easy and sort of scalable as possible.
Yeah. Get ready to be well versed in the language of Hopin.
Yep. Joe, that's our platform smackdown. Zoom versus Maestro versus Hopin. Quick, dirty, hopefully helpful. If you have any other questions, you know where to find us. We're always here.
Yeah. Do you want to hear about other platforms? We could come do round two. Throw it at us. Let us know what you want to hear about, what you want our opinions on.
All right. Thanks for listening. This has been an excellent episode. Share this with someone you know who's scratching their heads over having been assigned the job of deciding on platforms for live digital events.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Help out that event manager in whatever company you know.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Joe.
And we'll see you next week. Love a world where we have to just start learning platforms we haven't used yet because everybody wants us to do smackdowns.
Tell me about Goofy Ball. I need to know how it works.
Is that a platform?
I don't know. I just made it up.
Oh, okay.
It's probably a cryptocurrency.